And we're go.
This is the Uncle. It is April 15th, 2007. I'm the Uncle.
And I am Charlie. It's good to be with everybody tonight. It's a fine Sunday night. We're, in theory, those of us in the New England and surrounding state area, bracing for some sort of spring-winter storm, if that makes any sense at all. In theory, there's a foot of snow on the way. That's what I hear. In fact, looking outside, it is snowing now. It's very exciting. It's been kind of raining all day, so we'll see what happens. I say snow day.
That's kind of interesting, because I'd like to give a shout-out from Long Island, which, of course, is where I'm from. We've had a nor'easter, which means it has rained and been windy all Sunday.
Oh, wonderful. What a nice tax day that is. Fantastic.
It was beautiful. I went to the library. I did some studying. I did my taxes. I watched Sopranos.
Oh.
It was a wondrous day.
So now tell me, was this the premiere of the new season, or has the new season of Sopranos started already, and this was kind of one of the new episodes?
This was episode 2 of the final season of The Sopranos. I missed the inaugural episode.
Oh, man. So you're already behind.
No, I'm kind of behind the eight ball.
Ah, well, so
but,
did you go and, like, cheat? Did you read about the first episode so you'd be up to date for the second episode?
No, I totally didn't. So I only had a marginal idea of what the hell was going on.
Fantastic.
You know, events would take place and people would die, and I just, you know, didn't know the why, the how, or the when. So.
Yeah. Now, have you been keeping up with the series diligently ever since its inception?
No, not at all. I mean, I started to watch it, but then college took place and I didn't have HBO, so very on and off, very sporadically.
That's a sad story, Uncle. That's a very sad story. Well, good for you. Yeah, granted, I've seen like 10 episodes of The Sopranos and good stuff, but I just haven't had the dedication. You know, I just haven't been in there, which is mixed. But I do think it's excellent that you're down with the last season. So was tonight a crazy episode? Obviously, you have nothing to base it on, but
Well, tonight was, I would say it was a good episode. I'm a big fan of this comedy of The Sopranos, and in that regards, it delivered 110%.
Nice.
One of the main characters, I guess Tony's number two, really, who also goes by the name of Christopher.
Okay, good.
Had financed an independent movie.
Oh, no kidding.
Because I figured this would be a great way to make money. It was called Cleaver.
Oh, no way.
And as he described it, it was a cross between The Godfather and Saw.
No.
And so on tonight's episode, they had like a preview. They had like a scene from the movie. And it was actually featuring, I believe it was one of the Baldwins. It wasn't Daniel and wasn't Billy and wasn't Stephen.
There's so many to choose from.
There really is. Which one is the chubby one from John Carpenter's Vampires?
Alec? I don't know. I don't remember.
No, wait. No. Alec is the Shadow.
Hmm.
Billy is the crazy Christian from Biodome.
With Pauly Shore?
Stephen Baldwin.
Oh, Stephen.
I think, yes. Billy Baldwin was in Biodome with Pauly Shore.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Pauly Shore so eclipsed everything else in that film, it's hard to remember any of the other actors. You can understand my confusion.
So anyway, this Baldwin played the main guy in this movie called Cleaver, and just the, you know, it was basically, you know, it was intentionally done to be stupid, and, you know, it was about a mob hitman that comes back from the grave and gets revenge on his boss.
Fantastic.
And it was very humorous. I highly recommend the episode. I think people will like it. I liked it. I thought the comedy was very funny.
And, you know, as life imitating art, which is always very sad, I'm guessing Cleaver was not the box office sensation they'd hoped for.
Well, no. It's still, I think they're still looking for a distributor.
Oh, they're still shopping it around. Good.
Yeah, they're shopping it around. But, you know, the whole point is that, like, you know, the drama comes in where, like, you know, did this guy base it off of Tony Soprano, who's really kind of his father figure?
Sure.
And of course, you know, the Baldwin character is the villain, who of course meets a very bloody end during the climax of the film.
I would imagine that. Tony wasn't. Oh, right, during the film.
Right. So Tony was, you know, it was a good episode. I suggest people, you know, check it out. You might like it.
Now, what I remember from The Sopranos was the shrink that he would always go to, and I'm sure that evolved into numerous crazy things in the course of the show. Is she dead now? Is she even in the show anymore? Did she?
No, yeah, she's still in the show. He went to her actually to discuss, you know, his feelings about the movie.
Oh, wow.
So the shrink is still alive, and she's still kind of going with the wishy-washy, you know, search your feelings type stuff. So.
Oh, that's right. Search your feelings. You know it to be true. Well, I see. That's good that she's still around and kicking. And that kind of reminds me, while she probably has a degree in psychology, we would all remember that Peter Venkman had a degree in both psychology and parapsychology, and I feel that reminds me of something, Uncle.
What does that remind you of, Charlie?
Well, it reminds me of hearing a little more from you about Icon. Let's call it Icon Part 2.
Okay. So I was perusing the Icon schedule when I went there back in early March, and I noticed that they were going to have an event that was all about the Paranormal Society of Long Island. And it really was about, I guess, a group of individuals that go around and purportedly hunt ghosts. And something in the back of my mind said, you have to check this out. You have to see what this is all about.
It's your duty, your absolute sworn duty to do so.
It was. I didn't really pay any money to get into Icon, but that's a whole nother story. But, you know, I was there. I made the drive to Stony Brook. I was going to check out as much as I could.
Sure.
So they gave probably around a 5-page handout, and really on the back page, you'd be very proud, are the Zener cards, which was developed by Ryan's associate and still used today as a reliable method to study ESP.
A reliable method.
You, of course, will remember these cards from the excellent film Ghostbusters. Because they were the cards that Peter Venkman himself was trying to get the number of the hot blonde with, of course, you know, asserting that she had ESP powers.
Now, Uncle, little did I know, and folks at home can get in on this as well, little did I know that this was something that you had seen and it was part of the presentation, so how amazingly fortuitous that our segue was what it was. Fantastic.
It really was. We totally didn't plan that. But anyway, I've read up about the Zener cards online, and basically they've done studies, and for whatever, I don't know, reason you could call it, people always choose star.
Huh.
Star is the most common. Based on the symbols, there's a circle, a star, a cross, a square, and wavy lines.
And a couple of wavy lines, as we all know.
Exactly, and for whatever reason, star is the most commonly chosen and selected of the Zener cards.
Mm.
So basically, the Zener cards have proved absolutely nothing.
But
now let's go to the...
Yeah. You sure, even if you study the effects of negative reinforcement on ESP ability?
Correct. Even if you study that.
So what were they doing with these cards? Yeah, let's hear it.
No, this was just like, you know, they had a picture of Zener on the back of the handout and the Zener cards. I guess, you know, making the case that actual scientists study ESP, which is true. I mean, many of scientists over the years have studied ESP and psychic phenomena. The only problem is they haven't proven any of it.
Right, yes. And like, except for that Uri Geller fellow, right?
I just feel that the entire Paranormal Society of Long Island is full of bullshit. To this date, there has been no actual proof of any of the supernatural being real. So I went in as a skeptic, but I tried to give them the benefit of the doubt, but unfortunately I wasn't convinced. Let's talk about supernatural, the definition of supernatural.
Oh, please do.
Which is spelled S-U-P-E-R... N-A-T-U-R-L. This is on the actual handout they supplied to everyone in the room.
I'm sure that's in Webster's by now, you know, the unabridged. Very good.
Well, would you like me to read it?
I would love it.
This blends a butt into the larger umbrella of paranormal. According to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, it is relating to an order of existence beyond the visible, observable universe, especially, of or relating to God or a god, demigod, spirit, or devil. It is also defined as departing from what is usual or normal, especially so as to appear to transcend the laws of nature.
They came very close to actually lifting that from Ghostbusters. Fantastic.
Did they really?
Well, in some places. That's exciting. Do you suppose that Merriam-Webster actually spells it without, what was it, the trailing A?
Yes. You know, I actually did not check the dictionary to see if Merriam-Webster had screwed up the spelling of supernatural.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to after the Uncle Cast, and we'll report on that later.
Yeah. So basically, I went to this thing. They tried to show us proof or of what they thought might be supernatural elements.
Sure, sure.
I saw a bunch of grainy pictures taken under very low light with white orbs in them.
Oh, wow.
If that is the proof of the supernatural, Charlie, I'm about to become a millionaire because I have taken some hideous photographs during my lifetime, and I think, you know, people need to see it. They need to see poorly lit photographs that you could then say, well, maybe, you know, something was there.
Well, look, I think when this broadcast is done, I'm going to get on the phone with National Geographic and we'll both retire.
Excellent. As wealthy individuals.
That's right. That's right. So
we also went over, Charlie, EVP, which is short for electronic voice phenomenon, I believe it is.
Oh, I'm not familiar with this one. All right.
You essentially take a recording device to a suitably creepy place, and then you, I guess, record various sounds.
Oh,
and when you
okay.
play back the sounds, you try to, I don't know, maybe listen to the voices of the spirits that you've caught on tape.
Huh. All right. Like in Contact, the novel by Carl Sagan, where the Jodie Foster character keeps listening to dishwashers and stuff to hear aliens. Kind of the same thing.
Carl Sagan wrote the novel Contact?
He sure did. That was later
did he really?
The Jodie Foster movie. That's right.
Contact was such an awful movie.
Well, you could blame Carl Sagan, but he's dead.
Like, Carl, I thought Carl was one of the good guys. And it turns out he wrote the book for one of the worst Jodie Foster movies ever.
Well, I have the book if you'd like to read it.
I waited the whole movie to just find out the alien was your stupid father, Charlie.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that something? Now, well, but we digress. So, how long did the Supernatural Paranormal Society spend trying to make you a convinced believer?
Their panel went for around an hour to an hour and 15 minutes.
All right.
And one really amusing part was when one of the men, the guys running the show, brought out a Geiger counter. And I thought this was great because it was news to me that ghosts decided to hang out at Chernobyl. I did not know that spirits were radioactive.
Okay.
But he, of course, did admit that this Geiger counter he bought was originally acquired from the Soviet Union, and it was around 50 years old, and it had never actually been properly calibrated with the radioactive material. So basically, I don't know what it could prove, but it was kind of cool to actually see the Geiger counter and hear it click and stuff, and he was playing around with it, making it noise.
No.
I had fun watching that.
That's pretty awesome. All right. It was one of those jobs that's like metal and about the size of a shoebox and has the little sensor on a hose that you wave around in front of you.
Yes, right. Yes. It kind of reminded me of the motion detector from the fine James Cameron film Aliens.
Oh, sure.
And that really gave me a happy flashback.
If only he'd whipped it out and said, it's technical, it's one of our little toys, then that would have been extra great. But yes, so... Right, precisely. Perhaps a poor choice of words. So, okay, so he had his Geiger counter. Did they have... I don't know, some films. Did they do like a seance on stage? I mean, that's the kind of theatrics I really want to get out of my my performance here.
While I agree, I thought it would have been awesome if they had done their own electronic voice phenomenon recording.
Yeah.
And actually like been like, oh, we found this. And, you know, when they played it back, it said something like, hey, Macarena. But, you know, like, the ghosts, oh, my God, they're trying to tell us to do the Macarena. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm a total skeptic when it comes to these things. I was just reinforced even so more by going to this this symposium. But really, from a personal standpoint, I was very disappointed because it was standing room only.
Oh, wow.
Like, there were people sitting on the floor to listen to this. And it just, I think it really underscores humanity's unrational desire to believe in this kind of stuff.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
like if no one actually takes a step back and tries to look at the situation with a critical scientific mind.
Absolutely.
They just want to believe it, and therefore they do. And it's really sad.
You know, it's true. I think people are in a rush to look for meaning in any sort of area, and this is just one of many places that they'll try.
I agree. And I mean, it's something as silly as the electronic voice phenomena. I mean, if you really wanted to be somewhat scientific about it, you don't tell the people beforehand what they're supposed to be listening for.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, so, for example, they would play it. I looked at people in the room, like, what did I just hear? And then the girl would be like, yeah, you see, that kind of sounds like help me. And after, like, the power of suggestion is so strong to the human brain.
Right.
Even, you know what I mean? Like, if you really wanted to be scientific about it, you don't say anything. You say, what do you think it sounds? And someone says, well, I think it's saying get out. Someone else says, I think it's saying help me. And someone else is saying, I think we're alone now. And then, you know, it kind of it falls apart. But when you start it off and you preface it with what you think, the power of suggestion is so powerful, Charlie, that it shapes your own recollection of what's going on in the present.
Yeah, it shapes your perception of what it is that you're hearing. And this reminds me of something very important, which is a site called YouretheManNowDog.com. And I'm going to post a link to this on the podcast notes, but there's a version of the theme song to DuckTales that I know we all enjoyed, and it's the theme song as it was played, I believe, in Finland, but I could be wrong, and one of the fellows at this site got a hold of the theme song and has posted the English words that basically is what the Finnish sounds like. And it really is fantastic, such that once you read the English words along with listening to the song in actual, like,
you can't think of anything else.
And it's really a treat. So if anyone who hasn't seen that yet, just go to the show notes and check that out. It's going to be spectacular. But now, just so I don't lose this theme on the parent, I'm just fascinated to know. You said it was standing room only, and
yes.
I picture the extreme discomfort that, say, you and I would have, especially if we were there together and broke out laughing at some of the absurdity, because I'm wondering if perhaps everyone in the room was taking it seriously, as it seems the presenters certainly were, and whether, like, everyone else was on board, or whether there were some people kind of, like, snickering or like, hey, it's bullshit, you know, or what the general, like, audience reaction was to all this.
Well, I can tell you they took a straw poll just and had people raise their hands, so that doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah.
And they said, well, how many people believe in the supernatural? A majority of the hands went up. How many people don't believe in the supernatural? I raised my hand along with maybe one or two other people.
Yeah.
And then they said, how many people aren't sure? And the rest of the room raised their hand.
Wow.
But at least the lady next to me, there was a moment when I couldn't take anymore, and I leaned over to her and I said, like, do you believe in any of this? And she said, oh, I'm writing a book. You know, I'm an amateur novelist, and one of my characters is going to be heavily involved, you know, is going to believe heavily in the supernatural. And she said to me, it's fascinating. The reaction of these people to what's being presented is what I find fascinating.
No kidding. What a great research there.
As fate would have it, I found one of the few people that wasn't buying into it. And that just made me somewhat happy.
That's
because if I had asked the same lady and she had said something along the lines of, well, you know, I have these crystals, or I read auras, or...
Yeah.
I called up John Edwards, or Sylvia Plath, I have all her books. That just would have broken my heart. So yeah. I was so pleased that there was at least a handful of other individuals that really didn't buy into it.
Yeah, that would have been the last straw, right? You just couldn't have taken it anymore at that point.
No. If she had said something really flaky, I think I just would have got up and walked out.
Oh man, well, I'm glad that she kept you there. That's good. So
yeah.
Now I got to ask. It sounds kind of like you're running a blender there for some drinks. Is there some sort of ambient noise?
Oh, hold on.
Everything okay there?
Yes, everything is everything's quite all right. That was a cameo from my dehumidifier.
Good. Well, we need all the help we can get. Fantastic. Now.
Yes.
And I guess just
wait. Actually,
yeah.
Charlie.
Yeah.
You know what? All that stuff I said about the supernatural being fake.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man! And did you hear that dehumidifier turn on?
Yeah. Yeah.
You think that's just a coincidence?
I'm going to go back and listen to when it turned on and hear what it said.
Maybe it said something. Maybe, like, the spirit was really mad at me for dissing it,
yeah,
and it turned on the dehumidifier.
I think it followed you back from the convention.
Maybe it did.
It wouldn't give you dry skin.
That's right.
It's the curse of dry
and
skin.
And chapped lips.
That's right.
You know, instead of, I don't know, manifesting and scaring the wits out of me or making the walls bleed, it decided to turn on my dehumidifier.
Yeah, man. Will you ever smile with chapped lips? See, it'll get you eventually.
I know. I know. I got to be careful. I'm going to be looking over my back through the rest of this podcast.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, so that really, to me, that would sound like one of the highlights of Icon. I'm psyched that you went to that. That really is excellent.
Yeah, it was fun. I'm glad I went to it.
Very good. Very good. So I guess that was pretty much, is that the sum total of Icon Part 2? I imagine I wouldn't be able to focus on anything after that event.
No, it was hard to. Afterwards, we just decompressed and we drank the remaining, what was it we were drinking? We drank the remaining of whatever it was I had brought with me, and
yeah.
That was really it.
All right.
For Icon.
So, let's see, in the dealer room, did they have, like, kind of like all these things tend to go? They had a lot of comics, a lot of videos, a lot of, ray guns, all kinds of stuff?
Well, mostly, as I had said prior, it was, a majority of it was just anime stuff, you know? For example,
oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, stuffed cartoon characters and wall scrolls and dolls and a lot of medieval wares and
yeah.
Like jewelry and broadswords.
Yeah.
A lot of like Dungeons and Dragons books and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I really didn't think it was too great.
So the only puppets that were in attendance were at that event that you went to where they had the children making the puppets out of ping pong balls. Hi, Mr.
Oh,
ping
God,
pong
yeah.
ball. Yeah, all that.
Yeah, like smile at your puppet. Yeah, I was hoping maybe I could find a really awesome. Oh, what a wonderful puppet that is.
Yeah, yeah.
But Charlie, you brought to my attention the phenomenal kids show that I did not even know existed called Pryor's Place.
And this, you know, I was fortunate enough, and it's great how these things come up and how I find them. A friend of mine sent me a box full of comic books. Readers of the Preserve may have seen this, and there was that ad. Of this great, like, artistic reproduction representation
of
Richard Pryor with a straw hat holding down, like, a big afro with this big, like, exploding box full of CBS's 1984 Saturday morning lineup shows, which were, by and large, just regrettable and awesome all at the same time. And it's called Pryor's Place, and really, doing research into this has been a delight, and I encourage everybody to check it out on the Preserve. I have to imagine that this was some sort of community service that Richard Pryor had to do for one of his numerous good-intentioned and hearty and jolly offenses back in the day. And really, there's a site online, retrojunk.com, that does a really nice job of gathering together a lot of obscure content, and so help me, somehow they've gotten a hold of the intro to this show. And the song was sung by, and again, what a strange coincidence, Ray Parker Jr., who sang...
You tie it all together, Charlie. It all links up. You see that?
And for those listeners who now need to be brought into the fold, of course, Ray Parker Jr., you may recognize from the Ghostbusters theme, which is very important. He does a music video of the song that's 1 minute and 3 seconds long, just about, and it's spectacular. It's really, I have to wonder if both Pryor and Parker Jr. were co-convicted to some sort of shenanigans, and this was their joint community service, I really like to think. But there are tapes available of this. I'm doing my best to secure them. They're definitely Monster Squad or rarer. Actually, I'd say rarer than Monster Squad.
Much tape. Rarer than Monster Squad.
Yeah, you know, we're talking like $100 for a VHS tape plus. And
from 1984.
1984. See, it talks about that information drift that I've been going on about. And so,
yeah.
if I can get a hold of either Sax Education or Too Old Too Soon, Too Smart, Too Late, either of those episodes will really be amazing. Sax Education, of course, featuring Robin Williams, perhaps also doing some community service, and Too Old, Too Soon, featuring, I believe, and again, this is all due to thanks to the internet kind of cobbling this together, and maybe true, maybe not, Scatman Carruthers, who we will all know as the voice of jazz on the Transformers, and for the more horror.
The best
buff.
Part of Stephen King's The Shining. I'm going to say that right now.
That's right. The unfortunate fellow who catches an axe in the chest before he can help at the end, though he does deliver the snow cat, which is a useful service. So we will all know that Scatman has had a long and storied history, and apparently he shows up on what I believe was the series finale episode, and the byline, the description of the episode, discusses how he plays, I believe, Richard Pryor's uncle, Moses, and that Moses is perhaps more than meets the eye, and I just... That
wow.
Right there is really, I would love to be able to go and spend any amount of money and get this tape, because that really makes it worth it. So
that really is the grand slam home run of completely forgotten pop culture that you discovered. I'm very thrilled at the prospect of watching Scatman Crothers and Richard Pryor ham it up and deliver laughs and a lesson.
And that's right, and perhaps even some sort of strange Transformers-related skit, which would just be amazing.
And mind boggle.
Yes. Now, Uncle, I think with this build-up, what we're going to do is going to give a present to the folks at home, and we're going to go to our intermission.
Excellent.
All right, we'll be back, folks.
We'll return after these messages.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. It's even better with the video.
Phenomenal, Charlie. I'd just like to say, I hope you find one way, legal or illegal, to procure those episodes. This is something I need to watch.
Well, you know, and really, when legality comes up, it's kind of like running BurtGummer.com. I feel that if somebody approaches me, either the estate of Richard Pryor himself, which would just be amazing, and gives me a cease and desist order, that's a victory in and of itself.
That really is.
So look, I think as much as I'd love to keep talking about the estate of Richard Pryor and various legal action that he may take against me, I think I wanted to mention, Uncle, a little bit our great and shining and perhaps disastrous plans for BotCon.
Well, Charlie, BotCon, I believe, is the weekend before the 4th of July. I believe it's June 30th.
All right, that sounds right to me.
June 30th, Saturday, June 30th, or Friday, June 30th, and Saturday, July 1st. I don't know, right around there.
Yeah, that weekend at least.
It's that weekend, and it's taking place in Providence, Rhode Island. And it is, of course, the official Transformers Collectors Club. It's their yearly convention. And actually, the first time I met Charlie, I was astounded by his massive Transformers collection, which I believe includes one copy of every toy released from 1984 to 1990 in the United States.
That is true.
And I had asked Charlie, I had said, "Have you ever been to BotCon?" And he had told me he had not. So at that moment, I believe approaching 5 years ago when I had first met him, I said, "We're going to BotCon."
This is true.
And he looked at me, and I could tell by his reaction, he was like, "We're not going to BotCon." or I don't think he was too convinced. But I said it. I'm a man of my word. I meant what I said, and I said what I meant. and we're going to BotCon in the year 2007 in July.
That's right, Uncle.
And I cannot wait.
Yeah, that's right. You are a man of your word, and you're making it happen, and I think it's going to be great. It's a failing of mine that I never went to BotCon, especially. It would have been interesting to see, you know, the evolution of BotCon from a tiny event up to the media circus that it is going to be this year. I mean, it appears that Star Wars related or not, any large convention these days has the guys in the Stormtrooper suits show up, so I'm guessing the Stormtrooper guys are going to be there just for the hell of it. There's no reason for them to be, but they will, and that, of course, indicates some level of having arrived. In fact, the Philly Classics that I used to go to, the Stormtrooper guys were there, while moderately...
Oh, those Stormtrooper guys, I believe they're the 501st Imperial Legion.
I think you're right.
They show up at anything and everything, any excuse to wear that Stormtrooper costume, and they'll do it.
Yeah, well,
but, I mean, I can't say that I blame them.
Yeah, if you had
that's what happened there. Well, no, I mean, I wish I had one, but if you spend $2,000 on a Stormtrooper suit, I mean, it's kind of like having a boat. I mean, you want to use that and get as much use out of it as you can. So I can kind of understand why they always want to put, you know, the suit on and, like, go to all the conventions.
Yeah, man.
And I know that they do some, they're good charity-wise. I know they have a special children's charity that they donate to, and, you know, so they're good by my book, even though it is annoying if you go to, like, a Ghostbusters convention to see some jerk walking around as a Stormtrooper.
Yeah, they give the privileged kids a little Stormtrooper suits they can run around the orphanage.
There's a new documentary coming like out, that. Too, about them.
Yes.
I can't remember what it's
called.
Yeah, some dude just made there's a new movie hitting, you know, the Sundance equivalent kind of release events all about exactly the fighting 501st or whatever it is.
Fighting 501st. Phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, dude, yeah, if I spent $2,000 on a Stormtrooper suit, I think I'd barbecue in it or, you know, sit
around me too.
Watch the game with my beer.
I'd go buy groceries in it.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great. So I think that it's just really spectacular. After all these years, you know, I'll finally get to check out BotCon. It's going to be a zoo because it's, you know, the movie's coming out this year. It's going to be crazy. Everybody and anybody who was ever thinking they were a fan is going to be, you know, claiming the best fandom in the world. You know, there's a lot of Johnny-come-lately fans. There's going to be a lot of media attention. So it's really going to be something. Now, I feel a little bit, you know, I've probably even screwed it up at this point because of my reluctance to spend over $300 for the special tickets. Though, Uncle, I commend you, and here I'm tipping your hand, for really just going flat out, you know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead, and really, even before the events even happened, I feel you've experienced, you've got yourself lined up for great things.
Well, I really view it more as I've got myself lined up for complete financial ruin.
Same thing, right?
I'm spending more than $300 on a ticket for a convention. Now, of course, along with this come a lot of perks. I'm going to be seeing an official charity screening of the Transformers movie, I think like a week before it's released.
Right.
I'm going to, I got a place in the Hasbro tour.
Good. Wonderful.
I think I did. I'm not certain because she called. I got a confirmation call and she said, all right, we have you confirmed for the Primus package, the Hasbro tour, and the, what else was it? The Primus package, the Hasbro tour, and the charity screening of the movie. So I don't know if that means I'm in to all three events. Maybe I'm just waitlisted for some of them. I don't know, but I apparently am the 462nd person to sign up.
Wow.
Now, you got to realize, I didn't put my registration in until Tuesday. It was originally announced on Saturday. So 72 hours had transpired, and I was the 472nd person.
Now, do you think that's high or low? Because I remember your thought, your fear was that it would be sold out, you know, 24 hours after it went online. And there you are a couple days later. And, you know, so do you feel that's a lot of figure, a high number or a low number?
See, I really don't know. Maybe I had overestimated the amount of diehards. Because I thought for sure, with me sending it in on Tuesday, when it had been, you know, the tickets came out on Saturday, that there was no way on earth I was going to make the charity screening or the tour. But it looks like I'm in both. But I don't know. I have to call them and reconfirm because I'm still confused.
Well, that is just fantastic. It gives me great hope that you have managed to not screw this up, and you will be the man on the inside given the reports for the UncleCast, as is only fitting.
Oh, that's right. You guys will actually have an inside man. I mean, I figure it's only fitting. I mean, basically, any other BotCon we would have gone to, I would have had to spend at least $300 on a plane ticket.
Right.
This is only a 3-hour drive from my house, and it's going to be at the Hasbro factory, and, you know, the movie's coming out. It was just a nice confluence of events that let me say, okay, I'll spend this kind of money.
That's true. That's true. And I feel, you know, I feel comfortable with my level of involvement with this show because I feel that I'm so deep in it already that there's just that last step. I just have to kind of leave a mystery, but that's just me.
Right. I mean, but again, you know, your collection vastly eclipses mine, so...
Well,
you're all right by me, Charlie. You're not going to catch any nonsense from me. I know your commitment level.
There you go. Well, I'm excited about it. I want to thank you for making good on that promise all these years later. Now that it's come, you know, the fact that it's nearby where we live for really the biggest one ever is really pretty cool. Yeah, that works out well.
It's a nice confluence. I had wanted to go last year, and we both really didn't get it together, and I don't know, for whatever reason it fell through, and I'm so glad that we did it this way. It's so much better.
Absolutely.
It's like, this is the ultimate time to do it. There will never be a better time to go to a BotCon than now.
That's so true. It's very true. That's very true. So, you know, we're going to, for everybody at home listening, we're going to keep the updates on this. I mean, this is a lot closer than any of us even imagine. It's, you know, almost May, which is astounding. Or that's okay. Halfway through April. It's snowing outside, so I'm all confused. And really and truly, this convention will be on us before we know it. So that'll be great.
I think, Charlie, I have an actual countdown on my calendar at work that's something like 76 days until BotchCon.
Oh, fantastic. And look, we're going to get you that Nightbeat come hell or high water.
I don't know. I was thinking about it. The price of Nightbeat, Charlie, it depends on the price. $40-$50, I'll do it. If they want $100, they can go to hell.
All right. I think that's good. It's good to be reasonable and have a limit. Don't get carried away by convention euphoria, you know?
Of course. And then, you know, I don't want to overpay for stuff, but I feel like the climate of eBay and the marketplace in which we operate forces a large, huge markup on the items at the show. I don't think you get deals at shows anymore, strictly because the dealers already have to put money down.
Yeah.
You know, for the table, and they have to actually go there, so...
Yeah, well, eBay...
Yeah,
you know,
I don't know.
And really, you know, I feel... So, yeah, everybody, that's... We're going to be keeping you up to date on BotCon, so not to give it short shrift on this episode, but you mentioned eBay, which, as usual, puts me in mind of my numerous soapbox rants on the topic, and I think that, I can talk just briefly about the arcade market, which is interesting, and talking to kind of the pinball guys and stuff, even before I got into that hobby, when you would be able to go to somebody's house and get the pin for like $50 or $100 in the basement, nowadays, more often than not, with pinball machines or probably any sort of financial arrangement like that, if you're a reseller or a hobbyist, you get the argument thrown in your face of, well, this exact thing goes for, you know, twice this amount, you know, twice what you're offering on eBay, so, you know, so there. And really the response that one is supposed to give at that point is, well, have a good day, enjoy listing it on eBay, and I hope you get your price. And really and truly, I think at that point people realize, well, they're not going to. And so it's all, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into those prices and to that decision to sell things a certain way. And really what gets lost a lot of the time is you've got a title of something and no knowledge about functionality or condition or the restoration that went into
or it. Or any of that, right.
And this can go anywhere from a very complex item like a pinball machine all the way down to a video game, like a Genesis game or something like that. And really... Something I've been seeing lately, and it's an interesting way things are working, is I used to think it was really convenient. See, the problem is a lot of people probably think this way. When you find one of these resellers and they put up like 300 items, and it's say like 300 Genesis games, and they all end within like 1 minute after the next, so that's like 300 minutes long, and they start out pretty reasonably, like 99 cents a piece, and they have kind of high shipping, but if you buy more than one, you know, you get a break.
You get the free shipping,
yeah.
Right.
So you like to think, hey, this is a good deal, and really about a year ago, it was a better deal. And the funny thing was, just this last week, I watched one pretty carefully that was a whole bunch of Master System games, a whole bunch of Genesis games, and there were a couple things I was trying to get out of it, and I totally blew it, because the prices really went even above eBay prices for these games, which was kind of startling to me. It was like another step up of absurdity.
Now wait a minute.
Yeah.
When you say eBay prices, what do you mean?
So let's say Elemental Heroes, or even, let's say Gunstar Heroes, which is a pretty collectible Genesis game. And
phenomenal game, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it generally can go for, maybe complete, it can go for $15 to $20, and sometimes people can really squeak out a $35 bid, but you can go find one just about any day for $20 if you're willing to shell it out. And I think it went for more in this auction, at least $25, something like that. And that, across these 300 games, was replicated over and over, and it was funny because certainly people are saving money on shipping, but...
Now, Charlie, what a phenomenal way to advertise all of the Genesis and Sega Master System games that you have. I imagine resellers or the person selling them has bought lots in bulk and built up a kitty to the point where if someone was searching for a specific Genesis or Master System game, they would bid on it and then click out the other auctions and see a plethora of phenomenal games that they might want.
Absolutely.
That, to me, is how the hustle works.
Yep, you're absolutely right. So, it's really working for them now.
So if you had just put a Gunstar Heroes online or on eBay, you might get between $20 and $25. But the cumulative effect of putting on like 300 different video games all at once, that's... it's like I almost get it now. It's like it's just another example of the little guy getting screwed,
yeah,
and the big reseller, you know, having the economies of scale to just kind of get a higher price.
Yep, you're absolutely right, and it's really a great example of, you know, they hook people in with those kind of marquee games, and then you go see all these other 300, and a lot of them are very basic titles and stuff that goes pretty cheap. And then they end up selling those cheap games for actually a premium instead of, you know, the little guy who may just be listing the cheap game and gets his 99 cents for it. You know, this dealer ends up raking in all kinds of money for even the common games just because, as you say, this kind of economy of scale and just this kind of strange, you know, group psychology that's at work with the buyers, and it gets into kind of a feeding frenzy. You see everybody fighting against each other and for these 300 games, and all of a sudden... Super Thunderbird or whatever, yeah, well, let's say Super Monaco GP or something is going for $5, $6, $10, which is unusual.
Wow. No, and it is nowhere near a $10 game, no. In my opinion, at least.
And for what it's worth, that's kind of the eBay watch for this week, is again, trying to get a hold of the psychology at work, and it's fun to kind of watch the dealers really hone in on their craft, as you say. You know, they've really got it figured out.
Yeah, they really do.
But, like, so two other things I was interested in. Just two really quick media reviews. And of course,
sure.
Feel free to chime in with your own. These are just two things that we've been kind of experiencing today. One is Okami, which is a PS2 game that came out about a year ago, maybe 6 months. And people are probably familiar with it. It's the Japanese-influenced one. You basically control a magical wolf, and you do ink on parchment drawings in a very well-done interface to control various aspects of the environment and combat your enemies. And it's really, the graphics really are a great example of a late-gen game for a system, and how they really can learn how to massage and tweak and trick every last bit of performance out of a system after it's been out as long as the PlayStation 2 has. And it really is just a joy to look at, which I'd heard beforehand and really, really saw firsthand today, finally. I have to give two thumbs up to Okami. Anybody who wants to pick it up, definitely try it out. It seems very long, so you also get your money's worth. I haven't really looked into how long it is, but it's long, it's involved, you can interact with almost every aspect of the environment. Big fan of Okami. Something else that is on our mind today that Best Buy was kind enough to give us for less than $10, less than $9, less than $8, less than $7 was the He-Man and She-Ra Christmas special on DVD. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. From my very brief discussions with you, I've learned that this is infamous among the fan base as being perhaps one of the worst things ever made, but perhaps you can fill me in on that a little more.
Well, I actually have not seen the film in question, but I have heard various diatribes and invectives about it. I think the basic plot is that He-Man and Skeletor and Hordak and She-Ra all have to team up against a common enemy who, like, wants to steal Christmas from Eternia. I was under the impression that Eternia didn't have Christmas because there was no Judeo-Christian God.
Well, you see, Uncle, you're mostly right. But when Orko accidentally winds up on Earth during the Christmas winter, he befriends two children who share stories of the goodwill and merriment that the holidays embrace. When they finally return to Eternia, the holiday spirit is spread amongst the entire royal palace. But this overflowing goodwill attracts the unwelcome attention of Horde Prime and Skeletor. Will the combined power of He-Man, She-Ra, and the spirit of Christmas be enough to stop them? Only a viewing will tell.
That is actually right, Charlie, and I think you should view that.
I think so, too. And, yeah.
And report back onto your feelings on the matter.
There definitely needs to be a review of this, and I really was astounded, I think, and your money's worth for this, even aside from the awesome value, I'm sure, of the production of the show itself, is the special features this thing is bundled with. Let's see. Two brand new documentary features bringing viewers a comprehensive look inside this groundbreaking action-adventure series featuring interviews with the show's producer, artists, writers, fans, and more. It includes The Holidays and Morals of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, as well as The Heroes and Villains of He-Man. It comes with, like, some art cards. It comes with the I Have the Power music video featurette, approximately 10 minutes long.
Wow.
And it also...
All right, I take it back. That sounds pretty cool.
No, definitely. And just as a final... And this has no explanation. It's just a bullet point on the back cover. A montage of morals. So it comes with a montage of morals, apparently. So that's...
Wow.
Yeah. So really, what an amazing assortment of pack-in extras. Just great.
And only for $7.
$6.99. That's right. Plus, state and government-mandated tax. It's a terrible failing that I didn't watch it this weekend, but it's been filling my heart with holiday joy just knowing that it's here.
Wonderful.
So,
all right, well, I think that just about does it, huh?
I think that, if anybody hasn't done them yet, today was the 15th, so you probably just forgot to do your taxes. Now, normally that would be extra poignant, but apparently the federal government's giving you till the 17th, by which time you may have actually listened to this podcast, so have fun. Have fun figuring out the best way to maximize and minimize, everyone. It's that time of year.
TurboTax for the win.
That's right. There's the whistle. All right, Uncle. Well, look, it's been another excellent week, another excellent excellent time on the UncleCast.
Been great.
All right, and everybody, we're going to keep you updated about BotCon, and we will see you here again in a matter of days.
Good night.
All right, later, Uncle.